will President Obama begin to show leadership and turn around the climate crisis? Will the administration act on the president's stated vows to prioritize climate change policy in his second term? Can the events of the last year, all the extreme weather we've seen and record atmospheric levels of carbon dioxide, 400 parts per million, can all that pave the way for a less politicized conversation surrounding climate change policy in Washington, D.C.? We're going to find out. There was just a forum on those very questions this morning, and among those in attendance and speaking was Ann Kelly. She's the director of public policy for a very important group that I've been aware of and interviewing people from Ceres for, almost 10 years now, maybe longer. So, Ann, thanks for joining me on the Green Front.
Thank you, Betsy. Very glad to be here.
Really appreciate your joining us. As soon as I saw that this event had taken place, I just said, I got to find out what happened here. My co-host, D.R. Tucker, who couldn't join us today, and I are pretty obsessed with climate change politics. Being a Republican, former climate skeptic turned activist, me, you know, covering this beat for 15 years, environment, climate issues. You know, finally getting a president who seems to get it. Not much happened in the first administration. He, you know, made so many of us happy and encouraged and hopeful in his State of the Union address. And then we have not seen much happen, except if you turn on CNN, it's like the Weather Channel, you know, with killer tornadoes, destructive twisters, and all kinds of extreme weather. And we're not even officially into summer yet. So tell us, what did the White House have to say in terms of what we can expect coming up?
Well, Betsy, it's a very good question, and I'm very interested, as you are, and I'm sure your listeners are, in what is said in the next couple of weeks. But I think we have to put this in context. And, you know, the president is looking at the will of the people, and policy and law, as I said this morning, is usually a lagging indicator. It's usually a latecomer. In a democracy, it's a product of a consensus that wells up among the people writ large that then call for action, and then appropriately we pass our laws. Now, you heard and we all read that we were thrilled with what the president said in the State of the Union and in his second inaugural, and we believe wholeheartedly that he's committed to that. And we know that the public opinion dial went down when he talked about climate change. I mean, we all have a responsibility to grow this movement and to grow popular support. So I just want to put that out there, that that's part of what we all really need to do. If we believe that, you know, we are surrogates for this campaign, we have to really support the White House in their statements and in what they try to do. So that's number one. Number two, I think in the first administration, it is important to acknowledge the significance of the new corporate average fuel economy standards, the new vehicle mileage standards that the president got through. That is not insignificant at all. It's a huge contribution and a real milestone. And bringing the auto companies on board there was very significant. So we need to take that very seriously. It was also significant to have the first EPA administrator, Lisa Jackson, who was a dynamite in her own right and put forward a lot of key initiatives. And in this term, you know, Gina McCarthy is absolutely the slam dunk best candidate for that job. I worked with Gina personally under a Republican administration in Massachusetts, and she is absolutely the best person for that job, and we need to get her through. We need to make sure that Congress affirms her appointment. I think
you're
we can
here.
Look forward. Yes. So what do we have to look forward to? You know, my sense, and we are all anxiously awaiting the announcement from the president, my sense is that he's going to identify what the White House can do, you know, within its administrative authority and take action accordingly. And I think both nationally and internationally, and it's wonderful to have Secretary of State Kerry now at the international helm, someone who understands this issue so deeply and is working on it regularly. I think he will also call upon us. I think there's a moment of, I don't want to say ask not, but I mean, there's a moment where each and every one of us has to, you know, businesses have to look at themselves, their own carbon footprint, communities and cities. This is going to be a group effort, and I would guess that, and I would expect and respond to a call to action on our part as well.
Hmm. Well, you said so many great things. I can't wait to jump in. I'm so glad we have at least 15 minutes to really hash over some of the issues you mentioned. Let's just go back in order. You said that the dial went down when the president mentioned he was going to take action, you know, if Congress didn't on climate change. I had just recently seen that, and I was disheartened, but not really surprised to see that. Isn't that the catch-22 here, that, you know, it seems like the president is saying, make me do it, show me the consensus, make a lot of noise, like we see on gun control and other issues of the day. It's not really, the movement is not really showing that much muscle, because maybe not enough Americans, not enough members of the public really understand, you know, the connection between climate change and 400 parts per million milestone being reached and the extreme weather events we're seeing already in this country. How do we, you know, get over that problem? It's like chicken and egg, catch-22, whatever you want to call it. You know, polling shows that it's still not enough of a priority for enough Americans. If it were, wouldn't it help if the president gave a State of the Climate address and really talked about, you know, how urgent this issue is? Wouldn't that help a great deal?
Well, it might. You know, it might, and it might not. So it's fair that he is looking at what the American people are calling for, because that's what a president is supposed to do. And so we as Americans need to be much more vocal in what we're looking for. And you and I both know, I mean, if you go to a local neighborhood party and you bring up climate change, I suspect even in sophisticated neighborhoods, you're going to get a variety of responses. And what's most concerning, however, is that many people would probably look away or change the subject. And I've done this in my own neighborhood, and at you know, neighborhood events, school events, church events, there's a way in which people are immune to the issue. If they're not fully informed, they may simply not want to talk about it. They may mean well, but it's not first and foremost on their mind in many cases. Now, with those under 30 having been polled, you probably know this, it's a different story, and it tends to come up you know, much more, it's much more immediate on their agenda. But quite honestly, the American people, we need to grow this movement. We have got to break through in a bigger way. And frankly, you know, in a postpartisan way, as long as we create the we and the them, we're going to run into some barriers. So it has to be made a safer topic to talk about. And, you know, serious for our part, what we've done is put together this climate declaration that you've probably heard about, which in very plain language just says, let's get this done. We can do this. We've done it before. Let's get it done. It is the greatest economic opportunity of the 21st century, and it's going to be the right thing to do. And we really put out a broad, accessible narrative in hopes of building a very large popular tent, because the president would be correct if he were to say that it is not what he hears about day in and day out from people. It just isn't. You know, immigration has risen to the level, and kudos to all those who've worked on the immigration issue and really made it urgent. Same thing with gun control, though obviously that's running into barriers. I think we have some work to do on the climate and energy movement. And, you know, we are all members of that movement, and we all have to expand it. We have to let the president know we've got your back. If you talk about this, we will amplify your message. We will get behind you.
Mm. And what did you hear from in the keynote address from the president's deputy assistant on energy and climate change?
The address this morning was brief. I think that, to be honest, I think the White House is really building up for a much grander address that will come forward in the next couple of weeks. And she actually deferred. So she said, you know, I don't want to speak before my boss, understandably. She reiterated the president's firm commitment. She mentioned the CAFE rules, the recent HFC agreement with China, which is not insignificant. And she, you know, I think mostly she reaffirmed his personal commitment. And she would not have made such a forceful statement if he did not truly have a plan in place. There would be no reason for her to come out and do that. So I think it was really a warm-up act for a much grander announcement that we're really anticipating.
She being Heather Zeichel, right?
Yeah, it was Heather Zeichel, exactly.
Zeichel, sorry. And I was at the Women's Climate Change Summit. I know Mindy Lubber of Ceres was there. Perhaps you were as well last month. And she gave some comments that were encouraging. I decided that was as close as we were going to get to President Obama, so I chose then to ask my question, which was, would it not help to have, you know, some programming on mainstream channels, commercial radio, television in this country that covered, you know, all the environmental challenges we're up against and the solutions, but the mother of which is climate change. You know, there's no such program on. This has been my particular focus for 15 years. And, you know, if we had the dots connected day in, day out, instead of just, you know, the Rush Limbaugh listeners hearing that we're just a bunch of wacky tree huggers, might that help move, you know, the needle in the right direction? She referred me to someone who was in charge of the Office of Public Engagement, and she, without mentioning any names, basically said, well, we're the government, we can't really do that or support that, but go for it. You know, it seems that that would help. What do you think?
It would absolutely help. You're exactly right. And let me direct your listeners to Years of Living Dangerously. If you Google that, it's a very exciting new documentary that will kick off in 2014 on Showtime. And it is produced by the original producers of 60 Minutes. And it's a little bit of 60 Minutes meets climate change. And I happen to know we showed a couple of their raw clips at the series conference, and people were simply spellbound. So you look at this show and you know you're in the hands of a real master. I think that the woman from the White House was correct. I don't think that's actually the government's job. I think what we need to do is go to our media companies and really invite them to start to tell this story in compelling ways, just as we need to go to Madison Avenue and the advertising firms to help. These folks are the pros on persuasion, right? This is what they do. And, in fact, that's what we did when we hired a firm to help us convey the message, which came forward in the declaration because, as you know, sometimes those of us who are practitioners or were in the movement itself may not be the most compelling storytellers. I think we have to rely on artists and experts. And certainly the media companies should do exactly what you suggested and try to convey this message in a better way. But, of course, that needs some sponsorship and funding. And, again, the most exciting thing I have seen in the last 10 years is definitely the upcoming Showtime series. It could be a real game changer. So really want to direct your listeners to Years of Living Dangerously.
I agree, and I actually was lucky to meet the producers of that in San Francisco when they were out here fundraising about 6 months ago, and I've also seen the clips, and it could well be a game changer. They were hoping to get that show on by October. I guess maybe it's been delayed perhaps because of Hurricane Sandy and all the other extreme weather events that they're probably trying to get in that series. And so kudos to them for sure. And I still think we need something, you know, that's on, you know, day in, day out, if not week in, week out. That, I mean, as someone who's covered the beat for 15 years, a daily show, a weekly show, with and without a production staff, there's no shortage of challenges that we face on the environmental beat. And there's just no green talk show anywhere in America that people can, you know, go to for compelling, credible information and call in and have, you know, people on the front lines of the solutions talking about what's needed now. So that's my pitch. I'll get off my soapbox, but
You're right, though. It actually needs to be incorporated into every single weather report. This has to do with the meteorologists. So rather than a separate green show, I think we've run into the liabilities of isolating ourselves and using even the word green has had some mixed results. But I think if in fact it was on each part of each and every weather report, I think that would make a big difference. And so there are folks who are organizing meteorologists accordingly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and I think we will see that.
Yeah, and I still think we need both. I think we need to incorporate it in the mainstream, but until those reporters really get the urgency, you know, we've got programs on every other topic under the sun, including a lot of reality crap TV shows. Why not one on our actual reality, you know? So I, yeah, appreciate your comments, and I've been to those programmers, and they don't think there's interest. That's another catch-22. They assume that Americans don't care. Well, if they don't have programming that addresses this to get more to care, you know, that's going to continue to be the reality.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Okay. I won't dwell on that too much any more than I have, but thanks for your comments on that. What do you think of the new energy secretary, Moniz, so far?
You know, I have to be honest, I have not had any personal experience with him as yet, but people who know him well have been delighted and said that he's a superb appointee, and I'm thrilled about that. And I happen to know personally his chief of staff. I'm not at liberty of announcing that name, but I happen to know he's a very high-qualified individual here from Massachusetts, and we're very excited to work with him.
Mm, great. And any sense of what the president's going to do on Keystone?
You know, I don't know. I just don't know. I have no doubt that they are following the process in an incredibly rigorous and earnest way. The process is open and transparent and has a lot of integrity. And I, you know, having been in the federal government and worked for the EPA, I really do believe in the process. And if anyone has never been through an administrative rulemaking or this kind of an executive decision, then they should witness this carefully. I just don't know what the outcome will be.
Mm. Tell us a little bit about Ceres for our listeners who are not aware of your wonderful organization.
Sure. Ceres is a nonprofit organization based in Boston. We have been around since 1989, and we are the largest investor coalition in North America. We are the secretariat to the Investor Network on Climate Risk, which has $10 trillion in assets under management. None of that is owned by Ceres, but we do mobilize those investors toward climate and energy action. We also have a corporate program where we have about 75 companies that are our partners. We work with them on their own journey toward a more sustainable future. We publish the 21st Century Roadmap for corporations that lays out 20 specific expectations for companies in the 21st century, covering governance, stakeholder engagement, disclosure, and very specific performance metrics. And we have BICEP, which is what I direct, Businesses for Innovative Climate and Energy Policy, our advocacy arm, no pun intended. And that is a group of companies now up to 26, given our recent new member, Mars, Inc., the candy company, which is stunning in its own right that a private company that isn't being pushed necessarily to do so has come out as a climate advocate and also set very stringent science-based GHG emission reduction goals. So that's our advocacy arm. And then finally, Ceres has a public interest coalition with public interest groups that really keep us honest and provide us a tremendous amount of subject matter expertise in a variety of areas.
And for those who don't know, Ceres at one point was an acronym. Is it still? It's spelled C-E-R-E-S for those who don't know.
Yes, at one time it was the Coalition for Environmentally Responsible Economies. That was a very long definition, and so we just use the word Ceres now.
Okay, that's what I thought. I've been covering this such a long time, I remember that, so thank you for clarifying. Did John Podesta speak today?
He did speak today, yes. And if you go to the New Republic website, by the way, the entire forum is archived there. They may not have it up online just yet, but I know that they did tape the entire session, and it's worth listening to, especially John Podesta's comments, I think.
Yeah, Fora TV, which does record a lot of these public issue events, says the on-demand version will be available shortly, so not up quite yet. But John Podesta, of course, was active in the Clinton administration. He, of course, runs the Center for American Progress. They, of course, have climateprogress.org, one of the best sources for climate information. Just be curious as to if he had any memorable comments about, you know, the urgency here.
You have to be honest with you, when I finished the panel, I was deluged with commenters coming up to me afterwards in the hallway in the studio. So I regretted that I did not get to hear most of what Mr. Podesta said. And he's always brilliant. And I think, you know, I'm sure he tackled it very, very well, but I'd have to defer to the tape.
I understand. Thank you for sharing that candidly. What do you think of the administration's policy on fracking, the commonly used term for something that is both, you know, providing hope to many and, you know, keeping some environmental activists awake at night in terms of the environmental and health concerns. Well, what is your view? Does Ceres have a position?
You know, Ceres has come out in no uncertain terms identifying the investor risks associated with fracking. I mean, our frame, as you know, is an economic frame, and so we are really a risk and opportunity. That's the way in which we express our views. And we've highlighted the tremendous investor risk related to water risk with fracking, a tremendous amount of uncertainty. And we've laid out what we think the proper regulations need to be around fracking, which would change it quite substantially and get rid of many of the externalities and, of course, you know, no doubt result in a rise in cost, which happens when you regulate something properly. So we would call for investors to look very, very carefully at the nature of the risks involved and the cost-benefit analysis before suggesting that the practice continue. If it is to continue, we would support a very heavy regulated model both at the state and at the federal level so that it could be done as safely as possible.
Mm-hmm. And did you have any conversations with Mindy Lubber after the Women's Climate Conference? I'd just be curious as to what she felt about the event. I think it was the first one, at least with women and climate change coming together. Many of us were encouraged that it was happening at all, and there were some encouraging things that were being said, and there were also some of us in the audience that were feeling a little antsier and having more angst than we saw reflected, you know, in the people who presented the administration policies, but I give them credit for holding the event to begin with and for connecting us, and I guess it all depends in the follow-up to see what happens.
Yes, well, Mindy Lubber is someone who has devoted her whole life to this cause and has a tremendous amount at stake, and so she would be justifiably impatient because she has, you know, is managing a huge number of constituents who feel this urgency on a variety of fronts, and she's also a mom, and she's made that clear in many of her public statements. So, you know, we hear from investors all the time who are concerned. We hear from companies who are getting active. Our public interest coalition is telling us to move more quickly. And so I think that she, like a lot of us, is really anxiously awaiting the president's statement and also feeling a little bit of the frustration that climate change has fallen victim to the partisan divide that defines the Congress today. She remembers, as many of us do, a time when bipartisanship, you know, was not a bad word. And it was possible to cobble deals together. And I think we all miss the, you know, the possibility of those kinds of bipartisan deals being made, and we'd like to see that happen again. Now, that said, I have to say that I'm encouraged by the behind-the-scenes conversations that are going on the price and carbon front, and despite what's in the headlines, I happen to know there's a lot of good people on Capitol Hill really genuinely trying to figure this one out. And to me, that's the point of light that you don't always hear about on the news, but we know those constructive conversations are going on.
Yes, and I don't know if you're aware of the Citizens Climate Lobby, but they'll be convening next week in D.C. to meet with members, representatives on both sides of the aisle to talk about a carbon tax. So that should be interesting to watch, and I might even be there participating.
Yes, we know them well, and I was listening to the interview earlier, and we know about their event next week. We are in touch with them, and they're promoting an interesting model that really deserves to be seriously considered, a tax and dividend. There's any number of tax fee models that are being looked at, and I think that's encouraging in and of itself because that's the conversations we need to be having.
Well, Ann Kelly, I thank you for participating in this conversation, and on short notice, I really appreciate your insider comments. We are out of time, but congratulations to you and Ceres for all the great work you continue to do.
Thank you so much, Betsy.
That does it for this edition of The Green Front. You can check out the archives at prn.com or my website, thegreenfront.com. Later today, have a great week.